You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
October the 9th, 2020, Nancy Pelosi going nuclear, looking at the amendment number 25, looking for a way to remove President Trump from office. She's saying that, in her words, the president is, shall we say, in an altered state right now. Boy, that opens up so many lines I could use against you, Nancy. Anyway, she says, the president is, shall we say, in an altered state right now, so I don't know how to answer for his behavior. And then she says, but what I've heard, and I'm quoting others, she's very specific, I'm quoting others who say that when you're on steroids and or if you have COVID-19 or both, there may be some impairment of judgment. But again, that's for the doctors and scientists to determine. But she's not going to wait for such a determination. She's moving forward in the House to push to remove the president under the 25th Amendment. What is that involved? Is that possible? How would it play out? I'll break it down for you in our section right after the news today. In the meantime, we still cannot get Joe Biden to say, what are you going to do about the Supreme Court? We know Biden and the Democrats want to pack the Supreme Court. They want to increase the number from 9 to 14, 15, whatever they think they need to add more Democrats so they have control of the court again. Just as surely as they also want to add D.C. as a new state. And the two senators would, of course, be Democrat. And Puerto Rico. They want to do that as well. And talking about even breaking up California into three different states so the law have additional Democrats voting in the Senate. If you can't win by the rules, change the rules. That's their plan. But the question again for Joe Biden, what are you going to do about the court? And his answer again just yesterday. You'll know my position on court packing the day after the election. Oh. And the reporters just say, okay, we'll wait. No, we don't wait. We find out exactly what is your plan, and you tell us now. Or are you afraid it will blow up in your face? And Biden did say, if I say anything about it, then that's all you'll be writing about, whatever I say. Does he not know by not saying anything? They're also making a story? No, I guess not. Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican, South Carolina, gearing up for the Supreme Court battle in Washington, of course, to get Amy Coney Barrett nominated. And he's in a political battle in South Carolina, the fight of his political life, apparently. A former Democrat Party official trying to run as a nonpartisan in a virtual tie with Lindsey Graham. In 2014, he had a 16-point victory over his Democrat challenger, so things have changed for Lindsey. New survey out, 56% of Americans say they are now better off under Trump than 4 years ago under Obama. That's a Gallup survey, 56% to make that proclamation. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio urging individuals protesting lockdown measures in Orthodox Jewish communities remain peaceful. He said, I know you disagree with my plan to crack down and shut down some of your synagogues and your services and close some of your schools and businesses again. He said, but, I want you to listen to this, people that don't follow instructions from the New York Police Department will face consequences. Unless you're out there promoting something the mayor favors, that's all for it. He's all for it. Speaking of COVID, boots on the ground, Chicago, Andrew sent me this out of the Chicago Tribune. Nearly one in five Chicago residents who sent blood samples to Northwestern University testing positive. That's according to an ongoing study, that 20% infection rate higher than they anticipated based on earlier research. What does it mean? Just that so far. And while de Blasio is cracking down on the Orthodox Jews, New York University says it's not going to comply with guidelines set by the state, urging institutions to suspend in-person classes if 100 test positive for coronavirus, so they're going to do what they want to anyway. Oh, Dateline Portland. The mayor of Portland, Ted Wheeler, supposedly down in the voting. His candidate is a woman, and she was seen wearing a skirt, and she really loved this skirt because her skirt had a pattern with the faces of various communist dictators. Che Guevara, Mao Zedong, and Joseph Stalin, all of them on her skirt, and she's proudly prancing around. You think they don't have plans to retake this country?
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
Businesses, restaurants, nursing homes need to be free of COVID. So you should be contacting Wellington Environmental. A professionally trained team will disinfect your facility using powerful but safe disinfectants. And here's something new. Wellington has a line of foggers that you can use to disinfect your own facility. These foggers are in high demand, but Wellington Environmental has some for now. They cost about $500. But my listeners get a big price break, a $100 discount. You save $100 just by saying you heard about it on Larry Connors USA. For more information on getting your personal fogging device or to schedule professional disinfecting, 314-644-4930. 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality, lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Crazy for thinking that my love could hold you. I'm crazy for trying and crazy for crying, and I'm crazy for loving you.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
The president is, shall we say, in an altered state right now, so I don't know how to answer for his behavior. But what I said about the president was that we don't know if somebody who, I've not said this, I've quoted others to say there are those who say that when you're on steroids and or if you have COVID-19 or both, that there may be some impairment of judgment. But again, that's for the doctors and the scientists to determine.
Quentin sets the music for each segment. He has a list we pull from, and he can put whatever he wants, whatever he deems. Quentin, I have to ask you, you knew Pelosi was leading the segment, and you led off with crazy? Are you laughing? Are you, okay, hands up. I plead nothing. Okay, that's good. I'm just asking. So here she is, House Speaker Pelosi, got a plan to empower Congress to remove the president from office using the 25th Amendment. Trump's reaction, that's absurd. Others are saying it's a stupid trolling stunt. Does it have any chance? How's it done? What's going to happen with it? Well, Republicans are obviously upset, and they say she's still trying to stage a coup. She could not do enough through the Russian collusion story. They could not get rid of him through impeachment. And now we're in the final days of this election, and they still think we might not win, and we got to do something to get this guy out of there. And now that he's been treated for COVID, and he might be on some steroids, it might be delusional, paranoia, not fit for being around anyone. They never had a concern about Biden and his fumbling and bumbling around. They never once have voiced any concern about that. They never once voiced any concern about Hillary when she was stumbling around in the 2016 campaign. But the target's Trump. The target has been Trump. even before the election, as we're going to find out as we get into more of these documents being released. And Fred Flights of the Center for Security Policy is going to join us before this hour's out. We're going to get into great detail about all this information being released. And here's something that you should keep in mind, and a good reason to stick around. Fred is saying that so the president's ordered the release and declassification of all these documents, it might be too late. What? Well, I want Fred to explain that coming up a little bit later. All right, so here we have Nancy turning to the 25th Amendment. It allows for, in the case of the removal of the president from office or of his death or resignation, the vice president shall become president. Very simply, it clarifies the vice president will become president, as opposed to acting president, if the president resigns, not going to see Trump do that, dies, yeah, or is removed from office. Now, there's where Nancy's going in. I don't think she's going to kill him, but she does want to get him out of office. And the 25th Amendment then establishes procedures for filling the vacancy in the office of the vice president and for responding to presidential disabilities. Here's the real issue for Nancy. Who can determine the president is unable to fill the presidential duties? Well, Section 3 of the 25th Amendment says the president can declare him or herself in the future that they're unable to discharge the powers and duties of their office, unable to do their job. Now, we saw that, of course, with Richard Nixon. He stepped aside, so Gerald Ford took over. Must be stated that way in a written letter to both the president pro tem of the Senate, which would be the vice president as well, and the Speaker of the House of Representatives. The 25th Amendment came into being, proposed by Congress, then ratified by the states after the assassination of President JFK, providing procedures for replacing the president or vice president in the event of death, removal, resignation, incapacitation. And Nancy Pelosi is now pushing the issue that these COVID-19 treatments, they could be impacting his thinking. And why she does that, well, she points to the fact that he suddenly tweeted out while he was in the midst of these treatments, stop the negotiating on the COVID relief package. Just stop it. No more negotiating. And they were still close to $1 trillion apart. But he said, no more negotiating. We're done. But if you will send me a clean bill that provides money for the airlines and the airline employees, and if you send me a clean bill providing $1,200 a month to citizens who are in need, I will sign either one of those. But now we're not negotiating. Send it to me. I'll do it. Well, in her view, Nancy Pelosi's view, and what they're trying to sell you is that, see, he's erratic in his behavior. No more negotiations. But if you send me this, I'll sign it. Do they not understand what he's saying, that I will not negotiate anymore, but here's my final offer on this. If you'll send this to me, I will sign these for them. But now, new word from the White House today, Trump is okaying a new COVID relief package. That's going to take a lot of the wind out of Pelosi's mental fitness issue. But according to the White House, while the president did 2 days ago call off negotiations and say, just send me a clean bill, now the White House is preparing to offer a new $1.8 trillion coronavirus relief bill 2 days after he said he would do that. Now, I said they were a billion apart earlier. They were closer to a trillion apart. Those numbers, you start throwing around numbers like that, I mean, it's staggering, isn't it? So Mnuchin is supposedly going to be discussing that, maybe even at this hour, Nancy Pelosi. They're supposed to have a meeting sometime this afternoon. So Trump now tweeting out, COVID relief negotiations are moving along. Go big. They don't know what to make of this guy, and I told you previously, I think sometimes he does a lot of rope-a-dope with them. Just like Muhammad Ali. Get them up against the rope, they don't know what to do, and kind of bounce back off. They just don't know. Keeps them guessing. And I don't think, in my opinion, I don't think the decision for Trump to say, go ahead and do this negotiation is because she's pushing the 25th Amendment, because it will not go anywhere. It will not go anywhere. But she believes there would be a real reason for it. Congressman Doug Collins pointing out in his opinion, and this is perfect, first the Russian hoax, then sham impeachment, now trying to invoke the 25th Amendment because Trump fully recovered from the coronavirus. We won't let Nancy get away with it. And then pointing out, according to Congressman Andy Biggs of Arizona, congressional Democrats have not stopped their quest to remove President Trump since the day he was sworn in at office, working night and day to overturn the will of Americans. And then Donald Trump Jr., you got to appreciate this one. He said the third person in line for the nuclear codes, but claims she was set up by her hair salon, wants to talk about the 25th Amendment. Good one. Oh, I think it's clear, too. That's funny. Nancy Pelosi, who just kind of wandered around her hair salon and got her hair done when everybody else was told, no, the salons are closed, you can't do it. But she got her appointment, and she got in and got her hair colored and everything like that. And she, as Trump Jr. says, you got the president who gets the nuclear codes, and after him, you got the vice president, and after the vice president, the third person in line is Nancy Pelosi, the one that was claims that she got set up by her hair salon to make it look like she was breaking the law. And she went on, I wouldn't have done it. She said, I got tricked. Are you going to give her the nuclear codes? But Pelosi says, we want to know more about his health. How long has he had COVID-19? She said, I think the public needs to know the health condition of this president. There's one question he refused to answer. When was his last negative test? She said, we need to know that in order to make a judgment about the actions taken after that. Nancy, you know, I would believe that you're absolutely, truly concerned about the welfare of this nation and even the welfare of the president with those questions. If I saw you pushing the same kind of questions about Joe Biden and his capacities and abilities and the meds he might be on. Do we know of any meds? Do we have any idea what kind of medicines Joe Biden is taking so he can sit upright for a long period of time or can come up with fairly cognitive answers and so forth? And I've told you before, if Biden is suffering from Alzheimer's or dementia or something like that, I pray for him on that. I don't want to see anyone go through that. But that would be reason not to be elected president. And Trump today stated, Joe's only going to be president for 3 months at the most. If he's elected, Joe will be president only 3 months because Harris will push him aside and jump right in. Well, anyway, you got Pelosi pushing forward with this bill. It would allow Congress to establish a permanent body to determine whether the president is fit for office. In other words, they would have an oversight commission on presidential capacity. It would be reflecting legislation that Democrat Congressman Raskin of Maryland had introduced back in 2017. So it's rehashing something, basically. But now we're in the closing days. You know, let me look at the calendar here. If I've got this right, I could be off. My math skills are not that good. I cipher, I carry, but the train leaves the station at a certain time, going 80 miles an hour. I don't care. You lost me already. I don't care if it derails or what happens to it. But if I'm correct, Tuesday marks 4 weeks until Election Day. 4 weeks. And she wants to rush this through? It has no chance. It's a charade, obviously. It's just something else to see what's under the circus tent. But she's unveiling this bill today, and they're going to try to set up this oversight commission on presidential capacity. But, of course, she's still got to convince Senate Republicans to go along with it. Plus, don't forget this extra little point. This is a very small point. Maybe a point that Nancy's overlooking. It's a small point. I'm kidding. It's a very big point. Not only does she have to convince Senate Republicans to go along with the fact that the president's incapable of doing his job and should be removed under the 25th Amendment before Election Day, the vice president would also have to sign the declaration. Now, what do you think the odds are that Pence is going to sign that? Huh? You want to put money on that one? I'll take a share of that action, believe me. I don't know if you've heard or not, but the Nobel Peace Prize has been given out. And, of course, Trump was nominated not once but twice for two different events. Obama got it the first 8 months of his office. He hadn't done anything at that point, but he got it. And they've been on the left upset that he would even be nominated, that Trump would be nominated. Well, the Nobel Peace Prize has looked at all the nominations, and they have made a decision. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
President Trump had three nominations for the Nobel Peace Prize. The first from a member of Norwegian Parliament, citing Trump's efforts in achieving a pair of agreements, diplomatic relations established between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. Recently signed in a White House ceremony, and Israel's Prime Minister Netanyahu said this is a pivot of history that heralds a new dawn of peace. That's pretty big. Because other Mideast countries are now involved and want part of it. Then a member of the Swedish parliament also did the same thing, nominating for Trump forging a historic peace deal between Serbia and Kosovo. Then an Australian law professor nominated him, citing the Israeli-UA peace deal, adding the effectiveness of the Trump doctrine helping America avoid endless war, killing thousands of young Americans. Those are all very good reasons. And the left was so afraid. Don't give it to him. Well, the decision's been made. The world now knows the Nobel Prize is going to the World Food Program for its work during the pandemic. Now, this is a UN agency. Now, before I get into that, maybe I'm wondering how many of those who were so excited Trump didn't get it, I wonder if they know that this food program is led by a former Republican governor who supports Donald Trump. They may try to take it away from them. Yeah, the former governor, Beasley, South Carolina governor, David Beasley, he was told about it. He was in Niger at the time. He said, I think this is the first time in my life I've been without words. I'm just shocked, surprised, and then thanking his team. The World Food Program, stepping up, helping combat global hunger in the midst of the pandemic. It obviously is big. I'm not going to act like it's not. And it's not for me to say, based on everything, if this is bigger than giving what Trump has accomplished for the Mideast. The World Food Program is more immediate response and more immediate saving of lives. That is clear. And, of course, they can't help but point out that Trump had been against the world, no, not against the World Food Program, but against the UN and what it was doing. Remember pulling some monies back? And they've all been upset that Trump has been trying to cause troubles. that he was pulling money out of the UN, encouraging others to do the same. No, what he was doing is saying other countries need to be putting their share in. And in fact, many in the UN were glad to see him take that stance because, just like with NATO, it made other countries step up and add more to the coffers. The World Food Program obviously appears to be something that obviously has helped save lives immediately. So I'm not going to argue over it, getting it. But I will tell you this. The left is extremely pleased. Even though a Trump supporter runs the program, they're just glad it didn't go directly to Trump. Did not go directly to Trump. This time. Well, what after another 4 years of Trump? Oh, yeah. All right. Before we wrap up this hour, how President Trump has ruined political comedy. Are you kidding me? And then also in the next segment, Fred Fleitz is going to join us. So Trump has declassified information on the Russian investigation. Fred Fleitz has an article he put out. He says, it may be too late. Fred Fleitz joins us when we continue.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm local tax attorney Lance Drury, and I've represented hundreds of individuals and small businesses in disputes with the IRS. So if you've been contacted for past due tax debt or haven't filed taxes in a while, contact me, Lance Drury. And because each client's case is unique, we'll meet face-to-face and go over your tax situation in detail. Together, we'll develop a strategy to resolve your tax issues. I'm experienced, I know your rights, and I'll give you honest answers. Under my 8-point plan, my firm will file the necessary forms needed to resolve your issue with the IRS, and you won't have to worry about talking to their agents. I'll negotiate on your behalf to get you the lowest settlement allowed by law. At the Lance Drury Law Firm, we want to make sure that you're satisfied with the outcome. So call me now, tax resolution attorney Lance Drury, 314-238-7360, or go to LanceDrurylaw.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
Heat Bat Production.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Always glad to have on board Fred Fleitz. He's been actively following and updating us on all these notes and information being released by Trump as he declassified any information regarding the Russian investigations. And one of the first pieces coming out, after Comey did his testimony and couldn't ring a bell on anything he remembered, with the Director of National Intelligence, Ratcliffe, declassifying documents under President Trump's order and showing notes from the CIA Director Brennan saying that Hillary Clinton had a proposal from a foreign policy advisor to vilify Donald Trump by stirring up a scandal claiming interference by the Russian security services. Fred Fleitz, glad to have you back on board, sir.
Good to be here, Larry.
All right, Fred is with the president of the Center for Security Policy. But you have out a piece that you put out just yesterday with the National Review that you're saying that this declassification stuff I just read may be coming too late. How?
Well, the president made an announcement recently that he has ordered the immediate declassification without redactions of all documents related to the Russia collusion hoax and the Hillary Clinton email server scandal. And he did this because he's just fed up. He's tired of waiting for all these investigations to finish. He's decided that the Durham probe is never going to put out a report, or certainly not before the election. And he believes that the American people deserve to know what's going on. But the problem is, Larry, we're 3 weeks before the election, and there's so much else going on. I'm afraid this is too late. I think this has to get out there. But it should have gotten out 6 months ago. so the American people could factor this into their vote. I don't think they're going to hear about it if this material is released.
Well, I think the story has certainly gone around about Brennan and his handwritten notes in sitting in the Oval Office with Obama and noting on his notes on the 28th of July this meeting was taking place, and still some of his notes were redacted, but talking about what Hillary and a proposal from one of her advisors supposedly wanted to vilify Trump with this scandal. Now, I think that's out there, but is it just not sticking or not being believed or a shell game to look over here? For instance, Nancy rushing forward with the 25th Amendment to get rid of the president.
I think the American people have become numb to news on this story. And if the media was fair and objective, they'd recognize what a scandal this was. There's a smoking gun. That there actually was a report that was briefed from 2016, that was briefed to Obama, that Hillary Clinton promoted the scandal, the hoax, to smear Trump for colluding with the Russians. That should be on the front page of the New York Times. But the media is consumed with other issues. They're determined not to talk about this. I think the real issue here is that the president, I think, was very poorly served by a number of people on his team who did not press harder to get this information out faster.
Why do you think they were not pressing him? Let's begin there.
Well, I think some of them, you know, heard from intelligence officials and people at the Justice Department, you know, let's not do anything that's going to affect the investigations of Durham. But there's a big problem with people like CIA Director Gina Haspel. Now, I think on whole, she's been a fairly good director. She's tried to stay out of the news and give the president good analysis. But she is dragging her feet on releasing material that would exonerate the president, make him look good, because she's afraid that if she releases it, the CIA would pay a price from the Democrats. They have a history of doing this. CIA never wants to do anything that would be particularly helpful to a Republican president. They think they're being neutral by not helping either side. That's why you can't let careerists run these agencies. They look after the bureaucracy, not for the man they work for, the President of the United States.
Well, we know many in Washington operate under CYA all the time. You know, they're going to certainly cover their own arse as it is. But the current CIA director, I mean, if she's but she's not the only one who could have pushed him to release all this, right? I mean, what about the director of National Intel, John Ratcliffe? Or couldn't he have pushed it previously? Or maybe it did and it wasn't being done. Why did the president just decide, to hell with it, I'm going ahead and going to do it now, like you say, 6 months ago?
Well, you touched on an interesting question. Let me first say that the previous DNI, Coates, was even worse than Haspel. Not only did he not release stuff, but he appeared to be actively working with the people trying to undermine the president.
Right.
Now, Ratcliffe said he releases information, but it looks like he gave it to the Justice Department. I frankly don't understand that. I've been talking to reporters about that this week, mostly with Fox News, who are trying to figure out why is it the president said release this stuff and Ratcliffe hasn't released it. And it looks like National Security Council Director O'Brien hasn't done anything to get it released. Well, the president has ultimate classification, declassification authority. If he says to do this, it should be done. And I don't know why it wasn't done.
That's a very good question right there. I mean, that's a chain of command that should be followed immediately if it comes from the White House. Anything else would probably be done unless there's a question that it's maybe injurious or damaging to the nation or the someone. I can't come up with an answer. You say you've been talking it over and spitballing it. You don't have an answer still?
I don't. I know a little more about this than I can say on the air.
That's what I was thinking. That's what I'm sitting here thinking. He's holding something back. Go ahead.
I can't say anymore. I'll just say that. Let's just say I think the president knows the situation. And I think if he may decide to take a decision to move things forward. I mean, it's unacceptable where he tells the top officials who work for him to do something and they just don't.
So how did this information about the Brennan handwritten notes get out? I mean, Ratcliffe declassified those notes taken after Brennan had briefed Obama on the intelligence the CIA received, but not all of it, because there's apparently some references that where Brennan wrote under POTUS, referenced the president, some notes under there that are redacted, so we don't know what else he was saying. But, I mean, so we're still not full redaction of even what we have been given.
And you know, there's a big problem with overclassification in Washington. I don't understand why these notes from Brennan, you know, 90% of the pages are blacked out. I can't believe any of that stuff is really classified. The intelligence agencies, this is what they do. They agree to release something, but the pages they release are mostly blacked out, so you can't figure out what they say. That's unacceptable, too. That's another way of dragging their feet. The only reason this got out is because Radcliffe is in the DNI, and he looked at documents that previous officials knew were there but just refused to release. So Radcliffe has done a lot of good in this position, but I think he has to do more.
So, again, if the president's fed up with the Durham investigation, thinks it's not going to be getting anything solid, we've only got one indictment conviction out of it, actually a plea, I guess, from the FBI agent who admitted changing some kind of documentation. That's it, right? There's no one else indicted or at this point.
I think that's right, and I have a lot of my friends in Washington. They're very upset at these disclosures. They think there have to be prosecutions. I have one close friend who said, all right, it's time to prosecute Hillary Clinton. What? None of that's going to happen. Nobody's going to be prosecuted. But we could get the information out now so the American voter could, some of them will look at it, and it may influence the votes. That's the best that can be done. Otherwise, we're just releasing this information for history. If the Durham report comes out in December, great, but it's needed now. And since it won't come out, let's get the information out now.
Well, of course, you mentioned Fox News, and you work with, from time to time, the Fox News legal analyst, Greg Jarrett. And he says all of this demonstrates how immoral, unscrupulous, devious, corrupt Hillary Clinton was. And basically then says you got Comey, Clapper, Brennan perpetuating the greatest crime in American history. Two tiers of justice. If you're Donald Trump supporter, you get the book thrown at you. If Hillary, you get away with it. When are we going to see them walked out in handcuffs?
Well, that's not going to happen. Nobody's going to be arrested or prosecuted, in my opinion. I who knows? Maybe Durham's going to recommend some indictments. But I think in the end, they're going to get away with it. And we will have historians deciding what really happened. But I think the best verdict would be from the American people on how they vote. That's why it's really a scandal that Durham's been at his investigation since April of 2019, and we're hearing now his report will not come out until after the election. This report should have come out in the spring of 2020.
All right, let me turn your attention to something else. Lee Smith's best-selling book, 2019, The Plot Against the President, the true story of how Congressman Devin Nunes uncovered the biggest political scandal in U.S. history. That's now being made into a movie, actually. And some of them have stated that have been associated with it that, you know, they had to admit that they don't feel comfortable with everyone seeing some of this information, but everyone needs to know it. Do you know much about that? And I know Grinnell has been involved with it, Jim Jordan, Donald Trump Jr., Corey Lewandowski, Giuliani, so forth. Very quickly, 30 seconds.
I know Lee, and I know I haven't read his book, but he's had access to some pretty important internal documents, and I'm hoping more will come out in his movie.
Yeah, and they say they're updating what's been happening over the last few days, so that'll be good. Fred, as always, we appreciate having you on board, and since you're keeping your little tidbits to yourself, at some point we'll want you back to explain in detail, sir.
Okay, look forward to it.
Okay, thanks. Fred Flights. Have a great weekend, sir. Fred Flights, President, Center for Security. So, coming up, there's a piece by a columnist for the New York Times that I think is hilarious. I mean, I do. But basically, it claims that the death of political comedy, the death of political comedy can be blamed on Donald Trump. Stand by.
You can follow Larry on Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
At last, my love has come along. My lonely days are over.
And life is. This
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
So I'm looking at a piece written by Dan Brooks for the New York Times Magazine for their culture issue. And the title itself caught my attention. How President Trump Ruined Political Comedy. I thought, oh my God, they're making fun jokes about him everywhere. Why they think he has ruined it? But in the back of my mind, I also had this thought, that is, political comedy today is not like it was in the past. If you had a talk show host like Johnny Carson, and they were picking on the president, they did so evenly handed on the political issues and sides for both the president and opposing party. And it was not done with hate, and malice. It was done in fun. So maybe I upset you a little bit, but all good humor. You can stand up and take it. You can take it. But we have changed. We have changed from those days. You know that. I don't know how many of you even bother watching any of these late-night shows now. You've got some on the air that I haven't seen them. I don't bother anymore. Same thing as Saturday Night Live. Used to be really funny. And they had a lot of political humor. Right? It was funny. But it wasn't hateful. So here's what Dan Brooks wrote. He said, earlier this year, before everything had happened, I went to New York City to survey the state of American political comedy, which has never felt more important or more fraught. At a taping of Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, right there I have a question about the ones you're choosing to watch, but anyway, he said, I met a woman who had brought a birthday present for the host, a mock campaign poster promoting Ripley Hicks 2020, the two main characters from Aliens, emblazoned with the slogan, it's the only way to be sure. So then I was at Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. I watched the warm-up guy get big laughs out of a malfunctioning T-shirt gun. People seemed genuinely feel to be part of the movement. They were laughing. Then on a blustery Thursday night, I went to the program that started it all, The Daily Show, on a soundstage near the western edge of Manhattan. I watched Trevor Noah put on a clinic in audience management. During one segment, he transitioned smoothly from his impression of the president to a righteous condemnation of sectarian violence in India, followed by a joke about green text bubbles. I don't know how the hell all that got. I'm asking the question, not the writer. How did all that get into one segment? But he praised Trevor, saying he did a good job with it. Well, maybe he did. I don't know, and I didn't see it. But here's what he goes on to point out. That from 96 until the second term of the George W. Bush administration, The Daily Show was effectively the only program of its kind. In 2005, the Colbert Report gave the most popular Daily Show correspondent a half hour of his own. And then in January 2015, several liberal clip shows premiering, Full Frontal we were talking about, Nightly Show with Larry Wilmore, never heard of it, Opposition Jordan Klepter, Knapp, Patriot Act with Hashan Munja, don't know, Wyatt's Problem Areas, Jim Jeffries Show, Break with Michelle Wolf, said as of all today, all of those, all seven, except for Full Frontal, have been canceled. And then he says this, the boom and bust overlaps conspicuously with the political career of Donald Trump. In theory, Trump should be the best thing that ever happened to liberal comedy. 5 years ago, after he announced his candidacy, coming down the escalator, bearing his name at the apartment of the hotel that had his name in the building, but hope has not panned out. He said maybe it's the glut that any form of humor from sitcoms to barroom remarks causes trouble. Also, he adds that maybe satire has not accomplished what champions believed it could. Even professionals seem disillusioned. One of the performers he was watching took questions from the audience. And so he said, I asked him what comedy was like under current administration. And he answered, well, people say it writes itself. It's the worst kind of comedy. As a human being and comedian, I can't wait for this to be over. So there you have it. They want to blame Donald Trump for the death of comedy and political humor. I think they need to look into the mirror. They need to look back at what was considered funny. Even if you were poking fun at somebody, you didn't do it with hate and malice. Will Rogers should have taught them that. Just go back over some of Will Rogers' content. Look what happened in the previous shows that were doing it. But now, they stack the audience with these haters anyway, and they're going to crow and laugh about anything, but it's not funny. The audience outside the arena really doesn't get it. But they keep pushing it. And I'd like to advise them, if you think you're having trouble writing your comedy skits now, what are you going to do for the next 4 years? Now I'm laughing. How about you? I appreciate you joining us as always. I'll remind you that all these programs are posted as podcasts at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook, as soon as we go off the air, they'll be posted within the next 20 minutes. Back Monday. Book it.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.